OYOTU.com.
Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 141 of Sign Language. I know you thought this was never coming. You would be justified in harboring that belief. So I guess this is relaunch number two. Relaunch number one sort of failed, and I think we've all worked that out. And my apologies for that. Some stuff that happened last year that just burdened me with things that made me had to push non-essential things to the side, basically, without wanting to go into too much detail. And so that's why it sort of all faded as quickly as it resumed. As much as I have said in the past, and I still stand by this belief, that podcasters shouldn't podcast unless they've got something to talk about, what I'm going to aim to do this year is to get one episode of Sign Language out every fortnight. For the American listeners, that's every 2 weeks. I'm not going to promise it, but that is my aim. And I will do my best to have something interesting to talk about every 2 weeks. I may require some input from you guys. And generally in the past, you guys have been really good with coming up with stuff. I would like to say that I would like to keep it on the task of home recording as much as possible, but that doesn't mean we can't, you know, verge off that path here and there. The reason I killed sign language originally was because I felt like it was just veering off into all these tangents about which I didn't have a lot of experience, and I felt like I was just the, I don't know, uneducated game host on a, you know, game show full of brainiacs. So that's kind of where my head is at the moment. Having said all that, this episode is going to be a little bit random, but just a few things that I wanted to talk about and discuss and sort of bring you up to speed with where I'm at and what I've been doing, and to talk about gear. Why not? We love talking about gear. The microphone that I am recording on right now is my AEA R84 ribbon mic, and I do love this microphone. However, full disclosure, I am running this microphone, as you're hearing it right now, through an absolutely gorgeous piece of analog hardware, which is an API 5500 four-band parametric equalizer. That thing is absolutely beautiful. And for those who really want to know, I've got... just having a look at it, 1 dB of 100 hertz dialed in, 1 dB of 240 hertz dialed out, that's a cut in other words, 1 dB of 5k boost, and 2 dB of 12.5k boost. And that's what you're hearing right at this point in time. Now, after the API 5500 EQ, the signal is going through an analog compressor, which is no longer available, I'm sad to say. I only discovered quite by accident just last week that Safe Sound Audio, the company who made this compressor, it's called the Dynamics Toolbox, they've gone out of business. They were a small boutique English company, and this is it's a lovely compressor. I really like it. Having said that, I've never... Not had enough opportunity to really explore all of its potential. I've mainly used it for, you know, my voiceover work, and that's not only me. I do produce voiceover demos for, you know, voice talent around town, and a few other bits and pieces. But I've never really had a chance to put it through its paces, you know, in real anger. Like a working studio would probably do with its analog hardware. So I was very sad to hear that Safe Sound Audio have folded up, and the CEO of the company posted on their website and said, you know, we've basically just come to a point where we're not shipping enough units to keep the company viable, which is kind of sad, because I like the idea of, you know, guys with electronic know-how, who can design circuits, building great custom gear and starting little cottage industries, building compressors and mic preamps and all that sort of funky stuff, and it's I guess kind of one of the reasons why I bought that compressor, where I could have gone and bought any one of a squillion other more well-known compressors. So it's kind of sad to see that they've shut up shop and headed off into the sunset, as it were. It means, of course, that should I ever run into trouble with this compressor, I might be a little bit stuck. I'll have to call on the technologically inclined friends that I have in the industry to maybe help me out with fixing it, should it ever come to that. But hopefully it will give me years and years of great service. The reason I mention the microphone that I'm recording with is because I've been on a little bit of an acquisition binge of late. I won't go into what I've purchased just yet, because I'm getting to that. But what I wanted to do before I go any further is to let you hear what this R84 ribbon mic sounds like without any EQ, right? So you can actually hear what it sounds like just flat. I'm not going to take the compression out of the circuit, but I am just going to bypass the EQ. So here goes. So this is the R84 running flat. It's still going through the EQ, but I've switched the EQ channel out. It's not the same as hitting the bypass mode, apparently. From an electronics point of view, it's slightly different. Each channel has an in and an out. It has a switch, a toggle switch between in and out for each, the left and the right channels, as well as a bypass button. Apparently, not hitting bypass, but just switching the EQ channel out, still sends the signal through the whole circuit, but without applying any boost and cut, whereas the bypass, basically the signal comes in through the input socket on the back of the unit and then gets routed immediately to the output socket, so it bypasses all of the circuitry. So basically what you're hearing is the API circuitry, but with no boost or cut added. Would it sound any different if I hit the bypass? Probably not, but let's try it just for shits and giggles. So now you're hearing, oh, there is a bit of a difference. Wow, I didn't expect that. To be honest, I really didn't expect that there'd be much of a difference. It's subtle. And to be honest, by the time you hear this as a 192 kilobit MP3, it's negligible how much difference you'll hear. I did notice a difference between the bypass and, running through the circuitry, but with no boost and cut. So this is the sound of the R84 running flat, but going through some compression, but no EQ. So, having said that, it's time to switch microphones. Okay, so I'm back. This is obviously a very different sounding microphone, and I'll tell you what it is in just a moment. Before I get to what the mic is, the signal chain is a fair bit different, because my R84 ribbon mic I bought as a kit, and it came with a preamp which is designed also by AEA, and it's called the TRP, the Ribbon Pre. And it's a preamp designed specifically for ribbon mics, which require quite a lot of grunt to get a signal from them. It delivers about 84 dB of gain, and it has an input impedance which is astronomical. It's something like 18,000 ohms. If you know anything about mic pres, that's a fairly hefty impedance, which means you could run any microphone through it and it'd sound pretty darn good. However, because it was designed for a passive ribbon mic like the R84, it has no phantom power on that preamp. And as you can imagine, that rules out the ability to use any condenser microphone with that preamp. Great preamp though it is, it won't drive a condenser because there's no phantom power. So that has caused me to plug this microphone into my Focusrite VoiceMaster Pro, which is a single channel strip, analog channel strip in the rack. And the VoiceMaster Pro is a great little unit. I do find the compressor circuit in it is a little bit bitey. I'm not a big fan of it. But everything else in the channel strip is really nice. Basically, you've got about 65 dB of gain on the Mic Pre. You've got phantom power. You've got an optical expander, which I haven't activated at this point in time, simply because I know that all of these voice tracks that I'm recording tonight are probably going to pick up a little bit of the whine of my PC running in the background, and I'll do my best to gate that when I mix down, but I didn't want to influence the recording by having the gate running on the Focusrite VoiceMaster Pro while I was tracking. It then has vintage harmonics, the compressor. It has a tube sound circuit, and I don't think it actually has tubes in it. I think it's just a circuit-based emulation of tubes. And then it has an EQ circuit, and then your output stage. So it's quite a nice little channel strip. Like I said, it's only a single channel. So it's fine if you just want to do voice work, but it's no good if you want to mic something in stereo, because then you'd need two of them. But because it's called the VoiceMaster Pro, it stands to reason that most of the time you're probably happy to have a single channel. Okay, so now that I've rabbited on for a couple of minutes, you've got to hear what this microphone sounds like. What exactly is it you're listening to? Well, long story, which I'm going to make even longer. I have an audio client of mine who sends me work on a regular basis from the US. And he and I have been working together for, 7, 8 years now. And every year, just before Christmas, he very lovely sends me an Amazon gift voucher for $100. And in the past, I've bought things like DVDs and Blu-ray discs and whatever. And when the voucher arrived in my email a couple of months ago, just prior to Christmas, I thought, what am I going to buy? And in the weeks prior to that, probably only a week prior to that voucher arriving, I guess, I had sent off a rather mischievous email to the techs at the radio station and said, hey, if Santa Claus wants to buy us anything, you know, it'd be really nice to have a few more microphones, because we really only use three different microphones for all of our voiceover work in the radio station, or in the commercial production department anyway. And it'd be nice to have some new microphones and some variety to the style of the microphones, because all three of the mics that we've got are large diaphragm condensers. Well, lo and behold, an email came back going, sounds great, we'll see what we can do. Give us a short list of what you'd like to have a listen to. And I was like, wow, okay. So I then started, you know, Googling, as you do, looking for, you know, what sort of microphones would I really like to have as part of our arsenal, you know, at the radio station. And one of the things, you know, because of the dark character of the R84, which you've just heard, particularly without any EQ, it sounds a little bit flat, right? That actually works really well when you've got, I've particularly found with female voice talent, sometimes you get female voice talent who tend to be a little bit sibilant, and you get that really harsh distortion in the upper mid range, you know, sort of 8-10k range, and it can sound really nasty. And when I first got this R84 and we were still living in Sydney, I took it to work quite a few times, and I was setting it up and using it, particularly with a couple of female voice talent that we were using a lot in those days, who had a tendency to be a bit sibilant, and on the R84 they just sounded sensational. There was none of the sibilance. I didn't have to employ DSs to make the voice tracks, you know, sound nice. Now, you're probably wondering, what are the three mics that we generally use in the radio station? Okay. If you're an aficionado of microphones, you would probably know that one of the mics that is, you know, considered like the king of microphones for studio voiceover work is the Neumann U87. Now, the U87 has been in production, man, I would have to say continuously for at least 40 years, if not 50 years, I don't know. It's been around for ages. And it still, you know, you buy a new one today and they are like $3,500 US. They are not a cheap microphone. So we have two of those at the radio station. One of them is in the voiceover booth that I generally have my voice talent in. And it's nice, it's great, but I kind of feel a little underwhelmed by it in that it doesn't live up to the hype of what everyone thinks of when they think of a U87. And in its defense, that particular U87 that we've got is at least 35 years old, maybe more so. And I don't think it's been, you know, disassembled and serviced, as microphones do need to have done to them, you know, probably once a decade, depending on how much work they do. And this one does a lot. At least in the 20 years that our company has owned the microphone, right? So I think it's probably had, you know, 35 years of people spitting in it. And that's probably left all kinds of gunk on the diaphragm. And, you know, I'm talking microscopic particles, but over, you know, 30 odd years, that stuff's going to build up, and it probably has somewhat of an effect on the movement of the diaphragm. I don't know. But yeah, so I mean, it's a good microphone, not knocking it, does the job. And like any good workhorse, it just goes and goes and goes, you know. So it is good. It is, yeah, reliable in that respect. We also have a CAD microphone, and I couldn't even tell you what model that is. And then Greg, the other production guy, he uses, it's a Rode, and I think from memory it's the K2, which is the valve large diaphragm condenser. I think. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, so those are the three large diaphragm condensers that we generally have to use. And the CAD microphone, like the microphone that I'm talking on now, is quite bright. The U87 is a little more subdued, and the K2, if it's the K2 that I'm thinking that it is, it is also bright-ish, probably sits in between the CAD and the U87. So I started putting together this shopping list of microphones that I'd like to muck around with, and I'll read out. I will just go to my phone and I will call up the list of microphones that I put on my wish list. I had the Neumann TLM-107, the TLM-49, an SE Electronics Gemini 2, the Audio-Technica 4050. I probably should have put the 5040, but I thought, no, they're not going to buy another $3,000 mic. The Blue Microphones Cactus, although that's a $4,300 microphone. Telefunken AK-47 Mark II. Again, that's about $2,500. And a Mojave Audio MA-300. So that was what I sent off as my shopping list of mics that I would like to have, right, in my reply email. Now, because I had been Googling those things, when the Amazon voucher arrived in my email, see, there was a point to all this story. I'm looping it back. When the email came in with the voucher, I headed off to Amazon. And of course, Amazon starts throwing up suggestions based on my Google history. And so it starts showing me microphone listings. I'm thinking, oh, I didn't know you could buy microphones through Amazon. I thought they sold books. I mean, yeah, I know that they've branched out and they sell lots more things other than books. But yeah, I didn't realize you could get microphones. So I started browsing microphones. Anyway, I came across this thing that I'm recording on now. And I know you're dying to find out what it is. Marshall Electronics, otherwise known as MXL, have a whole range of microphones that start from under $100 US and go right up to a couple of grand. And I happen to see this particular model, which is the V67i. And this thing was, it was like $90 US. And I don't know what made me click on it to go and look at it, because I was probably the fact that it was, you know, it was around the value of the voucher that I'd been given. And I started reading some of the user reviews on Amazon, and the overall consensus was this microphone has no right to sound this good at this price point. Now, that got me intrigued. So then I read a little bit more about it. Turns out this microphone has two diaphragms and it has two active sides. It has a warm side, which is what I'm using now, and a bright side. Right? And it has a switch on the body of the microphone, so you can switch warm and bright. And just to make sure that you don't get forgetful, inside the diaphragm, or sorry, inside the grill, there is a red LED on both sides, so that when you're addressing the microphone, if the red LED's not on, you're on the wrong side. Okay, so I'm currently on the so-called warm side of this microphone. Now, the beautiful thing about this microphone is, yes, it sounds brighter and probably sounds a little bit, you know, well, certainly when you first heard it, you probably thought, oh, that sounds harsh. But by now, you've probably got used to the sound of it. The great thing is, I'm not applying any EQ to this, and it sounds lovely, but it's in a different class to the R84. There's a presence to the R84 that I just love. But for a $90 microphone, this thing is sensational. And I took it into work and I recorded, you know, some of our network imaging voiceovers with both male voice and female voice. And it was just fantastic. And I actually preferred it to the U87. Like I said, our U87 sounds a little bit dull, to my mind, where this just had a really nice cut through all the imaging beds that we would generally use for things like news themes and all that sort of stuff. I could just take a voice track recorded with this microphone, lay it straight on the bed and not have to EQ the voice at all, and I'd still get a really nice cut through in terms of frequency response. So having said that there's a warm side and a bright side, allow me to pause and I will flick the switch and I will turn the microphone around and I'll let you hear the bright side, but be warned, it's a little bit sharp. Okay, so this is the bright side of the MXL V67i. It's not massively different, but it is different enough, and I have yet to find a reason to actually want to use this side of the microphone. Maybe if I was recording a bass guitar with it, or maybe a bassoon, or, you know, I don't know, a cello maybe, or a double bass, you know, something that was a darker sound, maybe this would come in handy. One thing I am noticing as I'm tracking this, I haven't adjusted, again, there's no EQ. I am, for those who are interested, still passing the signal through the API circuitry, not with the bypass engaged, but just with the channel switched out, and still running through the Safe Sound Audio Dynamics toolbox. But what I am noticing is the huge gain difference between this, the bright side, and the dark side of this microphone. It's really weird. And I'm actually finding this rather offensive, so I'm just going to switch back to the dark side of the microphone. I shouldn't call it the dark side, the warm side. I'll talk to you in a sec. Okay, so I'm back. Yeah, so I ended up, as you can tell, buying this microphone with my voucher and have been very pleasantly surprised. And I would say to anybody who, you know, is happy to go with an analog, signal path, i.e. not using a USB microphone for their podcasting. If you want a nice, large diaphragm condenser, you've got an analog preamp and, you know, decent signal path to your sound card, hey, you could do a hell of a lot worse than this thing. I mean, it's probably made in China, I'm guessing. I don't know. I did get a complete catalogue of MXL's microphones with it when it arrived in the mail, and I noticed that most of the pages said nothing about where the microphones were made, except for two or three microphones in the catalogue where it had, you know, proudly made in the USA, you know, with a little US flag. And this was not one of them. So I'm guessing the rest of their stuff is coming out of China. I don't know that for sure. I'm just guessing. At that price, I'm thinking it's got to be. But yeah, really happy with it. You know, for that price, you could do a lot worse. So, yeah. So I said I was on a bit of an acquisition binge. I also picked up a pair of microphones. But that's another story. Talk to you in a sec. All right, so this is the final microphone to be demonstrated in this episode. And this one, as I said, came as a pair, and actually a matched pair. This is from the Australian company Rode, and these are the M5 matched pair. And these are a small diaphragm condenser, and as you can hear, that doesn't quite flatter my voice as nicely as either of the R84 or the MXL. I personally would probably never use one of these for voiceover work, although I have seen it suggested that they make a good backing vocal pair. So if you're trying to match a couple or a trio or a group of backing vocalists, you can set them up in, you know, XY, MS, space pair, whatever you like, and they will do the job. And I'm sure they would. But it wouldn't be my first choice as a voiceover mic. However, why I picked these up was for miking acoustic guitars. And in that respect, I am very, very happy with them. I've recently been working with some local musos here on the Central Coast, and I've set up a space under my house. Now, I'll come to that story shortly, but I'm just going to let you have a listen to some acoustic guitar. This was recorded here in my house just last week with the M5 in XY mode. Basically, the idea of XY mode is that you stick your two... these are a pencil condenser. They're only 5-6 inches long, and probably about 3/4 of an inch across. They're an end address small diaphragm condenser. And what you would do to do XY, you point the two capsules right next to each other at anything between 90 and 135 degrees, depending on how wide you want your stereo image. And you get a really nice stereo pickup pattern. So what I'm about to play you is a little bit of acoustic guitar recorded with the mics at around about a 90 degree angle to each other. So it's not super wide, but like I said, it's only one acoustic guitar. It's not like two guys sitting there playing, so you're not going to get a massive stereo effect. But you'll hear the transient response for acoustic guitar, absolutely gorgeous, and without the boominess that I find a large diaphragm condenser tends to bring to an acoustic guitar recording. So yeah, really happy with these little M5 matched pair for acoustic guitar, which they'll be getting a fair bit of work with. So here goes, this is what acoustic guitar sounds like. Thank you. Okay, so I'm back on the R84 with the EQ engaged and the compression still engaged, and everything is happy. Okay, so the story about the space under my house. I have this space, which is essentially my cellar. It's where I keep all my red wine. And it's a long, narrow space. It's only about 1.4 metres wide, but it's about 7 metres long. And because it's under the house, it's generally reasonably well isolated sound-wise from the outside world. I mean, you do get some noise leaking in, and if you put a loud source down there, then, you know, some of that sound would leak out. But it's reasonably well isolated. And so I've been thinking to myself, it'd be really nice to run a couple of mic leads and a couple of headphone feeds down to this space under my house. And that way, when I'm recording, whether it's musicians or voiceover people for their demos or whatever, it means I can get the performers out of the room in which I sit with my computers and, you know, and where I'm sitting now. And that way I'm only hearing what's coming through the speakers. I'm not trying to differentiate, you know, what's coming through the monitors from what's actually happening in the room beside me, which is not a great way to try and engineer anything. So over the Christmas break, I had the standard 10 days off that everyone else had. And so I, you know, bought 30 odd meters of microphone cable and 30 meters of headphone audio lead. And I ran two mic lines and two headphone feeds down to this space under the house. Got a little plastic project box from here in Australia. We have a company called JCar. Not sure what the US equivalent would be. They're kind of like an electronics project store. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure one of my American listeners will tell me what the US equivalent would be. But anyway, they sell these little project boxes, and they're basically just they come in all shapes and sizes, and they just, you know, you can separate the lid from the box and you can drill holes in them because they're just made of PVC plastic, and mount, you know, switches or sockets or whatever it is that you're trying to put together. So yeah, so I drilled the holes, mounted these microphone sockets and headphone sockets in it, got the dyno labeler and labeled them up. I'll take a photo and I'll post the photo in the show notes so you can see what I did. And then you know, got cable hooks and got all these cable hooks nailed to the, you know, the bearers underneath the house, and ran it up to a wall socket here in this room. And so when I want to record people now, I can put them down under the house and I can talk to them via, you know, my microphone, send that down through the headphone feeds. Got no line of sight, but that's okay. I can live with that, and generally they can live with that because they can hear me. And so I get to record. And so the acoustic guitar part that you just heard was recorded down in the cellar, which I'm mischievously referring to as Studio Vino. So whether that'll stick or not, I don't know. But, you know, I've spoken in the past about recording music with my mate Dave. Since I moved out of Sydney, you know, I moved north of Sydney. Dave already lived to the west of Sydney, but now he's moved even further west. So now for us to get together, it's a good 2-hour drive for either one of us. And as a result, you know, almost 4 years have gone by since I moved up here to Gosford, and Dave and I have barely done anything together. And I said to him, you know, around Christmas time, I said, mate, this is what I'm doing. I'm going to start working with some musos up here. I said, because it's driving me nuts not having anything to record or mix, you know, and I miss it. You know, I really enjoy recording and mixing music. And so, you know, I reached out to a couple of guys here that are, you know, quite talented singer-songwriters, and have started working with them. And I think it kind of gave Dave a little bit of a jolt and got him motivated to start doing some stuff as well. And so he's now started, you know, tracking more stuff, and he's started sending it to me to mix. So I'm now inundated with stuff to mix, which is great, because that feeds my soul. I get paid to make commercials and I enjoy it, but recording and mixing music is what I love. So it's nice to have some of that on the side now as well. So I shall be, you know, probably talking about some of these ongoing projects in forthcoming episodes of Sign Language, and wherever I can, you know, impart any useful information with regards miking techniques or, you know, interesting things that we've come across, interesting discoveries we've made, whatever, I shall do so. Having now run two microphone leads and two headphone feeds down to the Studio Vino, I'm already thinking, geez, I really should have run four mic lines so that I could at least record the guitar in XY with the M5 matched pair and get the vocal at the same time with the MXL or any one of my other couple of microphones that I've got. So I'm now thinking I will probably run another couple of mic lines down there as well. It's only a small space, so there's no sense running, you know, bucket loads of microphone lines down there, because you couldn't put, you know, anything more than about two people down there at once. I mean, yes, it's 7 meters long, but it's only 1.4 wide, so, you know, it's not a massive space. Like I said, I'll take a couple of shots and I'll stick them in the show notes so that you can see what I've done. So I'm excited. I'm looking forward to recording some more music, both with these guys who are up here on the Central Coast, as well as doing some more stuff with Dave. At the end of February, Kath is going away for a weekend, and I've said to Dave, get your butt up here, we're going to track an album in a weekend. Yeah, it can just be an acoustic album, but we're going to do it, and he's fully on board with that. So he's going to come up on the Friday night. There's a possibility there's a bass player going to come up for the weekend as well, so that'll be great. We're just going to have a boys weekend tracking music all weekend, so that's going to be great. The problem with Dave and I is that when we get together, we invariably start with pizza and red wine, and it just goes downhill from there. So I said to him, you've got to be up here on the Friday night. It can be as messy as all get out Friday night, but Saturday morning, it's business, you know, and we, you know, and that way we're not wasting Saturday by, you know, if you arrive Saturday, we're just going to waste Saturday drinking red wine and eating pizza, and we'll get nothing done, and before we know it, it'll be Sunday, and Kath will be coming home, and so really looking forward to that. That's the weekend of the 28th, 29th of Feb, so that's going to be fun. So, of course, the gear lust continues, right? So I'm thinking, at the moment, the only 48-volt source that I have for phantom power is the Focusrite Voicemaster Pro. I do have this Behringer console sitting on the desk, which I use as a monitoring path only. I never pass signal through it if I can avoid it. I mean, I shouldn't bag it. I mean, it's not horrible, but there's much better mic pres around. So I'd been thinking, you know, I love the TRP that came with my R84 ribbon mic, but it has no phantom power. So it's of no use to me for running, even though it's a two-channel mic pre, I can't run the M5 matched pair through it because they're small diaphragm condensers and they need 48 volts and there's no phantom power on that mic pre. So I'd been thinking, could I get rid of the TRP? And if I did, what would I replace it with? Well, it turns out that AEA have since released a model called the RPQ. And the RPQ is another two-channel mic pre designed for ribbon mics, doesn't have quite as high an impedance. It's a 10,000 ohm input impedance. But it would still drive my R84, but probably not quite as beautifully as the TRP does, but the advantage is that both of those channels have switchable phantom power, so it would be slightly more utilitarian than the TRP is at this point in time. But then I thought, I don't know about that input impedance, how that's going to impact the sound of my R84. I like the way it sounds now, and I'm not sure how that reduced impedance is going to affect the sound of the mic. Do I want to take that risk? It's made by AEA, so they know what they're doing, so it should be okay. And so then I started looking around for other mic pres. And then I fell in love with the Universal Audio 2610, which is a two-channel 610 mic pre. The 610 mic pre is fairly legendary, and Universal Audio does amazing stuff. If you've ever heard of the 1176 leveling amplifier, yeah, that thing is just legendary. It's a compressor. And it's made by UA, and if you can find a vintage one of those that's like, you know, 30 plus years old these days, then you've really done your homework well, because people who've got them don't let go of them. So UA have quite a strong heritage and are highly regarded. That particular mic pre, the 2610, yeah, it's up around the $2,500 US. It's like, can I really justify that kind of expense when I've got no income, you know, being generated from this particular work? Yes, I've got my audio client based in the US, but the stuff I do for him is all in the box, you know, so there's no revenue to be earned off external analog hardware that would justify the expense. I looked at some other mic pres, and then through the week I was browsing eBay here in Australia, and there was a guy here in New South Wales selling a Drawma 1960, which is a two-channel mic pre and compressor. Now, the Drawma compressors are also quite highly regarded. Although, to be honest, I have heard mixed reports. Some guys go, yeah, it imparts too much color. Other guys go, nah, that's what makes them great. So I guess it's one of those things, you just got to hear it for yourself to know whether you like it. Now, the thing about the 1960 is to buy one new, again, they're just north of $2,000 Australian. This guy was selling one. Admittedly, the front face was a little bit scratched up and some of the text had rubbed off. $650, I think it was, Australian. But he said he'd done all the circuitry, had been checked, and, you know, everything was working perfectly and it sounded magnificent. Yada, yada. And I was like, that'd be nice. Two channels of mic preamp with phantom power, another two channels of compression, which I don't really need because I've got the Safe Sound Audio Dynamics Toolbox. So I ended up letting that go. And I think for the time being, I will probably just be content with the setup that I've got, and I'll make the most of it. And, you know, when I absolutely have to have another channel of phantom power, I'll use the Behringer, you know, as a fallback position, even though it's not my first choice. I can't really ignore the fact that I've got 8 preamps sitting there that hardly ever get used, so it's crazy. Gear lust. Anyway, so that's where I'm at. One thing I have noticed, though, I will wrap this up quickly because I've been rabbiting on for a while. One thing I did notice through the week, I was mixing one of Dave's songs that he had sent me, and I was really happy with it, and I had built the entire mix up, as I usually do, with no compressor strapped across the two-channel master. And as you know, these days I'm working exclusively in Reaper. So I'd got no compressor plug-in running across the master bus in Reaper, nor a peak limiter. Right, I'd gain staged everything so that by the time I got to the last elements being added to the mix, I was up around, you know, -4, -3 dB peak. So I'd pretty much nailed it. I was pretty happy with myself. And I thought, you know what? I don't use this gorgeous analog hardware that I've got enough. So what I did was a little bit of tinkering, and I worked out that I could assign the output to outputs 5 and 6 of my sound card instead of the usual outputs 1 and 2. Outputs 5 and 6 by default... No, they're not. I patched it, that's right. I've got a patch bay in my rack. So I patched the physical outputs of the sound card 5 and 6 to the input of the API EQ. The API EQ is automatically routed to the input of the compressor, because that's the way I had the wiring in the rack done. And then I routed the output of the compressor to inputs 1 and 2 on my sound card. And then I fired up a copy of Adobe Audition, which I still have, even though I no longer use it in anger. And I recorded the output from Reaper via the API EQ, and I dialed in a little bit of EQ and ran all the compression, you know, analog. And I've got to say, I really liked what I got. The final mix to me, just, I listened back to some stuff that I'd done of Dave's about 4 years ago, the last stuff that we did for his fourth album, which I'm pretty sure was all, you know, compression and peak limiting done via plugin. And there was just a difference to it, you know, just a warmth, but it's too easy to say warmth. Everyone says warmth when they talk about analog, but there was, it was just, it felt more upfront, more in your face, more vibrant. Vibrant, not in a frequency kind of way, but just in a, I don't know, it just seemed to reach out and grab me more. So yeah, I was pretty happy with that. So I think I shall be doing that a little bit more. I won't be doing it with the podcasts, obviously, because it requires real-time mixing, because you've got to play everything out, you know, through it in real time and then recapture it. So anyway, those are the current adventures in my world. And like I said, I'm going to aim to have something to discuss every fortnight so that we can get this podcast out every second week. And... if you guys have got things you want to chime in on, or if you've got questions you want to ask, anything to do with home recording, I'd love to have your questions. And if you do want to discuss stuff that's outside of the realms of home recording, I'm okay with that, as long as it involves audio engineering to some degree. All right, guys, good to be back. Hope there's somebody still listening to this, and talk to you soon. Take care.
Sign language.
Another audiotou.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out
signlanguagepodcast.com
or search the iTunes Music Store for questions, comments, and feedback. Email studio@audiotou.com.